Are you tired of working with generic IT providers that rely on you to be the expert? Arc IT goes beyond just fixing your tech headaches. They specialize in proactive IT management, BIM support, and data security for architecture firms. The team at Arc IT gets your tech so you can focus on doing your best work. Whether you're a small firm of 10 or a growing practice with 50 or more employees, unleash the full potential of your creative vision with Arc IT. Visit getarcit.com and schedule your free IT assessment today.
Hi, it's Demetrius.
Hey, Demetrius, it's Mark. They're in.
Nice. Taking it to the next level.
Launching phase two of Gable Media on October 7th.
Hello, my name is Demetrius. Jason is out, but you are listening to Spaces Podcast Express. Thank you for coming back, everybody. Like I mentioned, Jason is out today, but we have a guest joining. He is an engineering geologist from Petro Geosciences. So please help me welcome Evan Price. Evan, thanks for joining us.
Oh, happy to be here. Now, I've been listening to you guys for a little while now, and I'm happy to be a part of this.
So. Great. Thank you for listening.
Of course. Putting on a good podcast.
Thanks. Evan, so you want to give us just a little bit of a snapshot of your background and Petra?
Of course. Yeah, so I just hit my 15-year mark as a geologist in the Southern California, mainly Orange County, LA, IE areas. Worked for a few different companies over the years, but currently I'm with Petro Geosciences. It's a geotechnical and environmental consulting firm, and we deal with geotechnical issues, you know, from small residential projects, such as custom homes, to multifamily, tract homes, and then dabble in infrastructure, public works, schools. We do, you know, forensic type jobs and, you know, even some big fault studies.
Okay.
Kind of tackle, you know, anything we can. A wide range of clients, and it's a wide range of projects, which keeps it interesting.
Yeah, I imagine. So how would you, in a couple sentences, describe what an engineering geologist is and does?
Yeah, so for geotechnical consulting, generally we are providing a look at the subsurface for the clients and making sure that the buildings are going to be stable during any sort of geohazards such as earthquakes or issues with the soil such as, you know, expansive soils, settlement. So we're really trying to design a building foundation and the grading recommendations to support, you know, long-term life of a project. And then we also do get involved when things do go wrong and how to correct it, how to, you know, fix it. We, you know, we'll jack up buildings and give recommendations for that, or repair landslides and how to, you know, correct these issues when they arise. Main thing is to try to prevent that before issues start.
Yeah. And when you're talking about repairing, that's basically reestablishing the soil to be able to maintain that building, or is it something else? Is there concrete recommendations too, like foundation recommendations?
Yeah, so there's a slew of different repair methods. There's routinely probably 10 to 15 different ground improvements that we can assess and figure out what's going to be the most cost-effective, what's going to be feasible for the job. You know, for landslide jobs, you know, sometimes it's grading with layers of geogrid. Sometimes there's grade beams in caissons, and other times there's walls of tiebacks. Then you look at other issues for poor soils that might have some settlement issues, and you know there's a slew of soil densifications or grouting, or we can go on and on about this, but these are things we look at and try to assess what's best for the client and best for the project.
Okay. And then you guys are the ones that provide soils reports, right?
Correct. So typically what we do is we start off with the site background and site recon, and then we assess how we're going to look at the subsurface. And then we get out there and actually do drilling. And depending on what the needs of the project are, we tailor our investigation to that, whether it's just simple soil samples of the subsurface. If we get into hillside, we have to look at slope stability issues and potential landslide surfaces. We'll actually drill a large diameter boring, and a geologist will go down in the hole and physically log it up to, say, like 120 feet. And then after that, we analyze the soil samples in our lab. Mm-hmm. And then we get to our analysis, and our analysis then goes into a report for the client.
Now, is it better to conduct that soils report with a design with a project design in mind, or are you guys typically going to test that soil without any idea what's going to go on the site?
No, this is it's a good question, because we deal with both all the time, and some projects it's definitely better to have a design, especially when you're looking at different constraints as property lines and retaining walls and putting in basements, and whether you need shoring, whether you need this and that to make the project work. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times we don't have the detail that we need to say, hey, you're going to be able to not use shoring. So we have to provide maybe different recommendations, making a bunch of assumptions, versus other times we do have that. And, obviously that helps us not waste money, and we can really dial in what we need to. But we understand too that the people designing the project might need to realign what we find to base their assumptions. So it goes back and forth. And, a lot of times it's a hybrid. We kind of start an investigation. We talk to the clients. We're working with them through it. And we have a back and forth. And hopefully, any changes that they've made actually, we don't need to go back out and do more work. But sometimes that does happen.
Yeah. So is there a preferred timing from your perspective of when soils engineers should come into a project?
I mean, it's preferred that we get out there as one of the first consultants and a due diligence.
Okay.
We can generally, for these, say a big track home greenfield investigation, we typically will be out there for our clients and give them a heads up. It won't be detailed, but at least get people on the same page as far as, hey, this is what you're going to look at. This is what your anticipated costs are going to be related to, maybe grading and some other geotechnical issues.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's preferred. The earlier, the better, because we do uncover surprises. We're digging in the ground, and there's always something there that's just not what everyone anticipates.
Yeah. And then I imagine you sort of hang around for a while and adjust the report as necessary based on sort of preliminary design scope and how that may affect your anticipation of what that soil is supposed to do.
Correct. So after we issue the report, if the project, say, goes into grading, rough grading, we'll also be involved out there. We have technicians that are monitoring and testing the soil compaction. And we might have geologists on site looking at the excavations they open up. We're out there making sure that what we saw on our borings, which are these small little snapshots of the larger area, actually translate. We make assumptions connecting the dots, and sometimes there are surprises in there. And once this, scrapers are running through, opening up the area, we uncover different things. And so we need to make real-time adjustments out in the field. We also carry over to post-grading, and we're out there monitoring during post-grade activities too. So we're generally involved, sometimes 3-4 years throughout the life of the project until they're our final report goes out and closes permitting process for the homes. You know, we give them a final sales report.
Yeah. So that's on for the three or four a year span is for like a large development, most likely.
Exactly. Yeah. I have a few 2016 projects that are just wrapping up now.
Yeah. Wow. And then on the, like on a single family home, is that pretty clear cut? Test once, give the report.
Yeah, like so the single family home is its own little beast. I'm sure you're aware of this. As far as it seems straightforward, I would say the problem that we encounter is we have like a minimum that we have to do. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times that minimum translates to a much bigger area, but we still have to reach a minimum for even just a small addition at times. So we have to go out there and we still have to do a boring. We still have to do certain baseline laboratory testing that can translate to a much larger area. So there's not a cost savings a lot of times for these smaller projects. And that's hard to sell to the homeowners at times that maybe don't understand that. So, oh, I'm just doing this little thing. Everything else is cheaper.
Yeah.
We still have to do that one test, you know, or these one test of eight different things. And we still have to write a report that's basically similar to a larger area.
Yeah. And that's sort of per standards that you have to do those same exact tests.
Exactly. So, yeah, we have, you know, different standards, cities, building codes that we still have to follow.
Yeah. So the time it takes is essentially the same
as a large. The time and effort is very similar. And then also, I'm sure you're aware of too, these custom homes, they try to maximize square footage. I mean, we deal with a lot of the coastal Orange County custom homes, which are, you know, the millions and millions of dollars. So square foot is a premium.
Yeah.
And to gain more square footage with a lot of these height restrictions, they have to go down. So we do a lot of basements and a lot of property line retaining walls and other issues that become fairly challenging because they're really, like I said, maximizing every inch of a project.
Yeah.
So when you do that, it takes a simple, oh, it's a small house into this, you know, very complex, sometimes time-consuming design.
Yeah. I'd love to dig into the basement design, but I don't think we have the time today.
Oh, God. Yeah. So real quick, we do have one project in Laguna area.
Yeah.
It's oceanfront. So it has a basement basically into the beach.
Oh, my God.
And it's also recessed into the coastal bluff. So we have this three-story massive retaining wall in the back and a, you know, beachfront basement. And she just look at, you know, with the ocean water considerations, you know, it's just a small prime property. But they had to spend these millions of dollars on this basement and wall design to, you know.
Oh, my God.
Make this project where, you know, and there's a home above on the slope. Yeah, so it's when you get out there and look at it, I'm like, man, what how are we going to make this work?
Yeah. I couldn't even imagine what it takes to sort of figure that out. And let me see. I'm trying to see.
It's money.
Yeah. Okay. That's the short answer.
Okay. It's not cheap.
Yeah. So let's move on. Another thing that jumped out to me is the forensic side. Can you describe a little bit or maybe an example of what you're looking at on the forensic side?
Yeah, so sometimes it's just a homeowner, maybe a homeowner association that they have some slope creep issues or some expansive soils that are causing some cracking in walls or some of the flat work. So it can be fairly minor, you know, maybe some drainage issues are affecting, you know, portions of the house. So other times it's tied into litigation for the same thing. You know, I've been involved in these massive tract home litigations where basically a lawyer goes around, knocks on the whole entire community's house.
Yeah.
And then the consultants have to come in and say, is this claim valid or not? And you run through the house and, you know, we're looking at tilt of the slab, so we'll do a floor level survey at times and see if, you know, there's issues. And, you know, sometimes we've had houses that, you know, over 8-9 inches of differential settlement on the slab. So yes, I've seen problems since other times when it's, you know, fairly bogus in that aspect. And other times it's, you know, insurance claims if, you know, a pipe break is causing distress to the actual slab. So we get out there and just provide the expertise saying, okay, yes, this is a valid soils issue, or no, it's not a soils issue.
Okay.
And another thing that I haven't experienced, but I heard, but say after Northridge earthquake, there was a lot of forensic work done for the insurance companies.
Yeah.
Validating any sort of earthquake damage claims.
Got it. So in that sense, after an earthquake, you're looking for just extreme settlement or...
not just... so much damage to the actual items in the house, but say, hey, my foundation was severely cracked and I have some, cracking my walls now.
Yeah.
And trying to determine if that was caused by the earthquake or pre-existing.
Okay. Yes. Wow. Is there a simple way to explain how you determine between it being pre-existing or caused by the earthquake?
I did hear a funny story about this.
Okay.
And one guy is kind of a mentor to me. He was telling me about him doing this. He was running around LA after and developed a simple question. He would ask people, when did you last put in your carpet? So, I don't know, years and years ago. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, you have carpet glue in these cracks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you look at little things like that as far as, you know, maybe the freshness and if there's a bunch of dirt or glue in the cracks indicating, okay, hey, that's been around for years.
Okay.
And we see that because people don't necessarily look for these cracks and other things until there's that earthquake.
Yeah.
So it's not that they're being malicious. It's just.
You start looking for it.
Yeah, you start looking and you start finding these things. Yeah. And we see that too. We do pre-construction surveys, say if there's an adjacent property next to a big basement excavation. Mm-hmm. You know, we can, before construction starts, we can survey the home and look for cracks and document everything.
Yeah.
And then you compare if they have any claims saying, okay, that was there before and or not.
Got it. All right. We're coming to the end, Evan. Told you it goes by fast. Is there anything you want to leave us with?
So I would say that, yeah, I have been listening to you guys. And one thing you guys have talked about is people asking questions. I know that was a recent one of you guys. And I found it really interesting. It got me thinking a little bit too. And thinking about my career as being a staff person and probably bugging the crap out of, you know, these people above me. But it made me realize too that my profession is very much a learn on the job type training. You come out of school and you have a geologic background, but you don't really have a construction related background. And there's, you know, a lot to learn of being out in the field and being around job sites and approaching it differently. So if there's any young people listening, ask questions, because I realize that you don't know these things. And if I don't hear these questions, I start really getting worried. You know what I mean? I'm like, hey, well, you should be asking questions. You shouldn't know this.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, being bugged sometimes, you know, you don't want to bug the bosses too much or your, you know, project managers, but that's how you learn.
Yeah. No, that's a good point.
I know you mentioned sometimes Googling things, but hey, you know, you're on a job site and something's going wrong. I don't know if you can necessarily Google. There's a lot of just, I've been through it and not a lot of answers online. It's just, I've relied on the experience of a lot of good people around me over the years. You know, we have people with 45 years of experience in my office, so pretty old and, you know, a lot of resources.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. So don't be afraid to bug the people above you.
All right. Well, it depends on the question too.
Yeah, good caveat. All right, Evan. Do you want to leave any sort of contact if people want to reach out to you on LinkedIn or social media or anything, or check out the company website or something?
Yeah, we actually do have a new company website rolling out here shortly. Okay. I'll post something on my LinkedIn, but yeah, LinkedIn's best for me.
Okay.
I don't have a huge social media work presence outside of LinkedIn. So just search for Evan Price, geologist on LinkedIn.
Okay, cool. All right, Evan, thank you so much for joining me. To the listeners, thank you for listening. Talk again on Tuesday.
Yeah, thanks, Demetrius.
Thanks. This show is part of the Gable Media Network. You can check out similar content at gablemedia.com. That's GABLmedia.com. You can help support what we're doing here by leaving a 5-star rating and a review on your preferred podcasting app. It helps others find us, and your support is the only way that this show grows. And don't forget to connect with us through our Facebook community, Instagram, and see the random thoughts and articles that we share on Twitter and LinkedIn. Thank you again for spending some time with us. Talk soon.
Calling all AEC professionals. Get ready for unparalleled professional insights with detailed and original podcasts by RCAT. This is the podcast that brings you the untold stories and lessons learned behind the design and delivery of a building project. Hey, it's Charisse Lakeside, aka the CSI Kraken, and your host. Join me as we dive deep into the tales of conflict, triumph, and sheer ingenuity.
Yeah, so when Serena was named for the, it was going to be named for the building, you know, we really were able to work with teams at Nike Branding and how to really infuse her influence and identity in the very public spaces.
Detailed features architects, engineers, builders, and manufacturers who spill the beans on the most complex, interesting, and downright odd building conditions they've encountered.
Another challenge of the shuttle is actually and putting it in launch position is how you brace that seismically. It's really supported by only two pins at the base of the booster rockets. And there's a large base isolator that's underneath the shuttle that kind of prevents it from moving too much in an earthquake.
When you have 600 people or 300 people in a room, acoustically you really need a high floor to floor so that you can have the right acoustic environment for people to be able to talk and that speech intelligibility is really good.
Every episode unveils lessons learned and connects you to the products you need to navigate similar challenges. Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Detailed today and be prepared for the unexpected on your next project. Every building has a story, and we are here to tell it.